Well, I want to thank the organizer for the invitation. I'm not a logician, so I work in dynamical systems, so if you have some questions about definitions that I forget to put, then just ask. My title is very technical, but in fact I'll try not to give a technical talk. So I'm working in analytic vector fields, problems of classification. Okay, germs are familiar. I want analytic vector fields to depend on parameters. So if I have a saddle and I have a linear part x dot equal x, y dot equals minus lambda y, orbital, I'm allowed to divide by the time so I can take one eigenvalue to be one, then I allow lambda, the ratio of eigenvalues, to vary. So in fact, when I speak of unfolding a resonant, I start with a rational lambda, and I will allow it to vary into the real numbers. Same for saddle node. The saddle node, so you all know the phase portrait. So you have a saddle which has collapsed with a node, and when we unfold, then we get a saddle and a node. So the question which interests me is the following one. When we want to understand, we want to classify. So classify, you want to, for instance, to find representative of equivalence classes. And when you want to say if two are equivalent, well, you could have a special canonical representative of the equivalence class. It's a normal form. So we want to classify, so we take normal forms. But if we go to normal forms, then very often, in fact, in the interesting cases, the change to normal form is generically divergent. And really the question I'm working on for now nearly 9 years is really to try to understand why it's divergent. And I will try to show you some reasons which explain this divergence. So as I tell you, the two cases I'll be considering, in fact, mostly this one, so the resonant vector field. So if I take the normal form for a family here, so you see I have started with rational ratio of eigenvalue. Eta is my small parameter, so if I multiply by 1 plus eta, I allow the ratio of eigenvalues to vary. I have put it's codimension 1. So codimension 1, I have a non-zero coefficient for the resonant monomial. And the reason of that form is that for the normal form, there is an invariant manifold of the form U equals some parameter U, so the resonant monomial XPYQ equals epsilon. I can make some normalization so that it's U equal epsilon. So if you look to the number of parameters, I will come back to that. I have eta and I have some A. And if I have this additional condition, the B is a function of A. So I have two parameters in this family. I have the saddle nodes. So this is my model, my formal model for a family. X dot equals X squared minus epsilon. Y dot equals Y 1 plus AX, so it's the picture you have here, which I will discuss for the whole lecture. And if you think, so this is A epsilon equals 0, and this is epsilon different from 0, and I don't see what the A is. It's formal, but I don't see it when I look to the real picture. Again, two parameters for the saddle node, epsilon and A. Okay, so let's first start with the simple things. So what's the interpretation of the formal invariant A? Well, if I have my picture here, I have two singular points. So I have one saddle, and I have the ratio of eigenvalues at the saddle. So it's mu plus. I have the ratio, mu minus, sorry. So the small eigenvalue divided by the large, and here the small eigenvalue divided by the large. Well, if I make the sum 1 over mu plus 1 over mu minus, then I find, so these are very, very large quantity. They tend to infinity when epsilon goes to 0. But the sum is my formal invariant. So that means that, in fact, when they go to 0, 1 is not exactly, okay, one ratio of eigenvalue is positive, the other one is negative, but they are not exactly one, the inverse of the other. There is a shift in between. So in fact, if you want to have independence of the ratio of eigenvalues at the two points when they go to 0, you need this second parameter. So if you think you have two, your invariance at the unfolding, you have one ratio of eigenvalues at one point and one at the other point, you have two invariants, so you need two parameters to encode this. So this is why we have two parameters. So if we want to do the same for the saddle, well, the saddle, what you have, remember, I was having u equals epsilon. So I have the ratio of eigenvalues at the saddle point, and then I have an invariant manifold. If you want to have a model for this invariant manifold, think of the limit cycle for the Hopf bifurcation. A Hopf bifurcation, it's a complex saddle. When you have a limit cycle, you have the multiplier of the return map, how much it's attracting. So you need two invariants, one for each object. So two objects, two invariants. It works in any codimension. That's really the reasons why these formal invariants are there. They are there to give all the freedom when you unfold. So the general philosophy in codimension one, and in fact in things where the philosophy I will describe for today is when you have one summability. We have the coalescence of two objects, and each object has its local model. So here I have one node, local model, one saddle, local model, and then I put them together, and the local models do not necessarily match together well, and this will give me divergence. So this is what we will try to describe. So if you think of the saddle, of the resonant saddle, if you have z dot equal iz plus minus z square z, and then you take plus epsilon z. So think of the Hopf bifurcation. So your two objects, you have one model at the focus. It's a point that's linearizable. You have one hyperbolic object here, but you have two models and they don't match together. So for the resonance vector field, this is what I say, a singular point and an invariant manifold. And for the saddle node, I have a saddle and a node. I will let my Excel. And if I allow epsilon to take complex value, I can have two hyperbolic. So I say I have two models that do not match. So I will describe one example of obstruction. Well, when we learn for the center manifold theorem, we learn that the center manifold is of an analytic vector field is not necessarily analytic. If you learn to one summability, it's one summable, but what does it mean? In fact, if we come back to the Borel's book, he says, well, you learn what is a convergent series. So a convergent series, you have a disk where your series is convergent. And if that's the radius of convergence, then you have at least one singularity on the boundary. But if you have just one, then you can extend your functions, and then you can turn around your singularity, and then you will get something ramified here. So for Borel, a divergent series, it's just a convergent series, but with a radius zero. So this is the picture we have. We have an infinitesimal disk of convergence, and we have one direction where we have one singularity which is hidden. So this is what I draw here. So you have y variable, and then I draw my x variable, I draw it as a complex variable. So then in the positive real direction, I have a hidden singularity, and then I can turn around and I get a ramified center manifold. So what is this hidden singularity? Well, if I unfold my saddle, has an a saddle always has an analytic invariant manifold. Okay, this is my saddle. And then what it says, well, this analytic manifold, so it's a graph, y as a function of x, like x is complex. Well, when I arrive at the node, well, if I turn around the node, then it's ramified. This is what it tells me. So in fact, this summability is that I have some, my hidden singularity that I have. Well, when I looked at the saddle, which has its invariant manifold, well, usually it's natural. When you have the invariant manifold, it will stop at another singular point. Well, my hidden singularity, it's like the node which is hidden in the saddle. So my first conclusion, so I will, before drawing the conclusion, I will come to the study of the node. So a node, I have two eigenvalues that are positive, lambda, which is small, and 1. And then there is a theorem of Poincaré, which says that if the node is non-resonant, so if lambda is different from 1 over n, then my node is linearizable. So I can bring, here is the model, and in this model, so I have, in this model, y equals 0 is, of course, an invariant manifold. In fact, for the linearizable node, I can calculate the solutions. So they are the form y equals a constant x to the power 1 over lambda. And what I see is if lambda is different from 1 over n, the condition I wrote, then x to the power 1 over lambda is not an integer. That means all the solutions are ramified except the one for c equals 0. So that means my node here has exactly one analytic solutions, and all the others, they are ramified. And then my saddle has its analytic manifold. And then what it tells me, if at the limit the center manifold is not analytic, it tells me that this analytic manifold at the node doesn't match with this analytic manifold at the saddle. So this analytic will come here. Okay, I have treated the case when the node is not resonant. And now what happens when the node is resonant? And then the conclusion I have, when I unfold a system which has no analytic center manifold, then the node is never linearizable for small epsilon when it is resonant. So we will discuss this conclusion. Why? So if the node is resonant, so I have lambda equal 1 over n, then this is a normal form for the node, x dot equals x over n, and then I may have a resonant monomial a x to the power n, which is the only resonance. I have two cases. The resonant monomial can vanish if a equals 0. If a equals 0, then n is an integer, and then all solutions have the form y equals c x to the power n. So that means all my solutions through the node, they are analytic. So wherever I go, I'm an analytic. So when I have my picture, it cannot ramify. Wherever I arrive on an analytic solution, I have no ramification. But I am unfolding something that's open. I cannot unfold something that's open into something that's closed. If it's closed, I cannot say anything. But if it's open, I'm sure it has to stay open. So this so it forbids A to be zero when epsilon is small. So I'm forced to have that. So if for epsilon equals zero, I have no analytic center manifold, then for small epsilon equal 1 over n, I am sure that my node is non-linearizable. And then, if it's not linearizable, when I look for the equation of solutions, I have some log which allows the ramification I want to see. So this phenomena, we have called it the parametric resurgence phenomena, because usually the divergence just means your two local models do not match. But sometimes the only way you have incompatibility in the system is that one of the singularity carries the incompatibility. And if you look, this occurs on discrete sequences of parameter values. The phenomena I have described on this example are quite general, so I'll try to, as much as possible, draw the general features out of it. To understand this phenomena, so why, and in fact, if you look, it's not only that you may have a non-analytic center manifold. It is the generic case. It's the generic case. It's very exceptional that an analytic system has an analytic center manifold. If you think you have two models, the general case is that the analytic invariant manifolds do not match. It's very exceptional to have them match. So if you think in terms of the unfolding, it's very natural that the generic case be the case of divergence. So to understand, we have made two things. We have complexified X and Y, because if we just look to the real picture, we don't understand what's the parameter A, and we don't understand why we have the divergence. And the second thing to understand, we have unfolded. Well, if we think, as I told you, a saddle node, it's a coalescence of two objects, so it's natural to understand, to unfold. Same with the resonant saddle. Another general rule, it will be difficult to give an explanation. I have complexified X and Y, so it's natural to complexify the parameter epsilon. But then, if I complexify the parameter epsilon, my singular points are plus or minus square root of epsilon. So if I make a full turn in epsilon, I will have exchanged the saddle and the node. So it will be difficult for me to give for instance, as long as my point is not a node, it will be linearizable. But then if I allow my saddle to turn and become a node, then this analytic manifold does not necessarily exist. So it will be difficult to give an explanation which makes a full turn in epsilon. I will make a link with the Borel summability, but without saying what Borel summability is, except for maybe one thing. So I told you a convergent series, it's a divergent series, it's a convergent series with radius of convergence being equal to zero, and then I have a hidden singularity in one direction. Of course, I can have hidden singularities in more than one direction. And then the idea, well, the way you can see the Borel transform is you have something of radius zero. Well, you blow it up, you bring it to finite distance, and then you will see your singularity. So you bring, and then you see your singularities. So in the saddle node, we have singularities hidden in two directions. And here the idea, so we were having, in this direction, we have seen, well, we were looking to the invariant manifold of the saddle, and then there was a problem with the node. And then if we start in the other direction, well, we start with the node, a nice linearizable model, and then you try to extend it, and you arrive to the saddle. So what about the others? So the, as I said, the right singularity will control the sequence of resonance 1 to 1 over n, I have said that if the right singularity, which is the one, if this singularity exists, the red one, it tells me that the saddle node has no analytic center manifold. And when I have no analytic center manifold, then I know that my node is never linearizable whenever it's resonant. And then what would happen with the left singularities is that they will control, but I have put quotation mark because I won't be precise in the lecture. They control in the limit some sequence of resonance, one of and the other eigenvalue minus p divided by q plus np, and I allow n to go to infinity. So sequence of values, but for special kinds of so if I take p equal to 1, then it's controlled by the first singularity. If I take p equal to 2, then it's controlled by the first two, and et cetera. And I can read some properties about the existence of resonant monomials from these singularities. There is a duality between vector fields and diffeomorphisms. So vector fields, it's two-dimensional objects. It's often easier to work with one-dimensional objects. So two families of vector fields unfolding a saddle node are analytically orbitally equivalent if and only if, so something which is one-dimensional, I should put the picture. So the holonomies of their strong separatrices are conjugate. So for the my saddle node, so I have the weak separatrix here is not necessarily analytic, but this separatrix is always analytic, the one that's tangent to the non-zero eigenvalue. And then I can take a section to this separatrix, so a disk, I can take an initial point here, and I draw a circle surrounding the origin in the separatrix, and I lift in the leaf the curve here, and when I come back, so this is called the holonomy of the separatrix. So it's a one-dimensional map. And for a saddle node, it's a one-dimensional map which is tangent to the identity. And the theorem is that if these one-dimensional diffeomorphisms are conjugate, then the vector fields are orbitally equivalent. So if I forget about time, but just the foliations, then they are equivalent. If you look at this diffeomorphism, so I have, if I put f epsilon x equal to x, so I look for the fixed points, then I have two fixed points, x squared minus epsilon, which corresponds. So they correspond to the two separatrix of the saddle and the node. So it's the case where you have two fixed points.
Do you think this corresponds to the manifold associated to one of the eigenvalues, or stable, unstable, or whatever?
Oh, this is the the plane.
Complexifies.
Yeah.
Manifold associated to the tangent in the space, no?
Yeah, the plane is a tangent, is a strong stable manifold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how do you have this return map?
You have to think the time is complex. I'm looking to the leaf. Complex time, okay? So it's a foliation.
Okay.
So then I have, so the leaves are two-dimensional, and then. Now, don't hesitate to ask questions. I prefer to. So we have the same for resonant vector fields. So there is a duality between vector fields and then diffeomorphism, which have, so here when we have diffeomorphism, I have one fixed point that if I take the q's power of the diffeomorphism, then I have, it's the case where you have a fixed point and a periodic orbit of period q that coalesce together. So I will describe what is a modulus of analytic of orbital classification for not a saddle node, a family unfolding a saddle node. What is the modulus of classification? I would say I have one family and I have another one, and I want to say they are, the families are orbitally equivalent if and only if they have the same modulus. So I want to, something that describes completely the dynamics of my family. As I told you, it will be difficult to give a description for I will not be able to make a full term in epsilon. So I will do a full term in epsilon, but in a ramified way. So I will give a description on a ramified sector in epsilon space like this. And if you look, what I'm not covering twice is the direction where epsilon is positive. So it is this direction where I do not allow myself to come back a second time. I don't allow myself to exchange the saddle and the node. But I can go as far as I want. If I go epsilon complex, then I have a ratio of eigenvalue, which is a complex non-real number. So in the middle, you have to think these are the parameter values. At the origin, okay, in the middle, it's epsilon equals zero. And now what I'm looking is I'm work in x and y coordinates. The problem, where I have the problem is in the x variable, because this is, so I will look, instead of covering a neighborhood in x space, I will cover a neighborhood in x space by two sectors, and then times a disk in y coordinates. So what I am describing here is two sectors in the x coordinate. So for instance, when it's the case of the saddle and the node, so this picture, it corresponds to my x space that you were seeing like that. And here are the separatrix of my two singular points. And then I will take a sector of this form. So I have a sector where I'm not allowed to make a turn around the singular points. I just have, and then if I want to have a covering, well, I will have a second sector. So this is my starting point, epsilon positive. So you have the upper sector and the lower sector. And then I start turning in epsilon. So my singular points in one direction will move like that. And when I turn in the other direction, they will move like that. And in fact, I can go, for instance, when I go to this and I go to this. So these are the how the sectors behave. So the upper sector has this form with some spiraling that I haven't drawn properly. This is the upper sector, and I have the lower sector here. The common feature that I have three intersection parts, one that was going to the node, one which was going to the saddle, and one in the middle, and then I have this here. And if I have turn in the other direction, I have it there. What's the idea of these spiraling sectors? These spiraling sectors, well, the property of the node is that when I have in the neighborhood of a node, any solution is asymptotic to the singular point. Well, if you go to the complex plane and you have, first integral of this form, your singular points are linearizable. If I allow lambda to be complex, you can make calculation. You will see that if you take the spiraling in the right direction, some right spiraling, then you will have leaves of this form. So in fact, infinity is what I call for my node. So here I have, so when I take my spiraling here, all the leaves over that spiraling, they have the same behavior as the node when they come to the hyperbolic point. The point that I call zero, when I go to a saddle, the leaves explode. Well, if you look at a hyperbolic point and you take spiraling in the right direction, your leaves can explode in the same way. So I take my sector so that my points are hyperbolic, but the leaves here, they are asymptotic to the point. and here they explode. And if you think here, it's the same value of epsilon, but I will describe the dynamics in two very different ways. Here I take a sector where the leaves are asymptotic to the point, and in the upper direction I take a sector where the leaves will explode like the ones in the salon. So the idea is, instead of describing the dynamics on a whole neighborhood of X times a disk in Y, I describe the dynamics on one of these sectors times a disk in Y. What's the idea of doing this? Is that on any of these sectors times a disk in Y, I can bring the vector field to the what I call the model. It's my normal form. On this sector, there is an analytic change of coordinate to the normal form. So this is the, not only there is one, but it's almost unique, which is what is important. Because on any of these sectors, so take the blue sector times the disk, if I look, so I have a foliation, and if I look to the space of leaves, so I have no, my leaves cannot return, they are like graphs. And if I look to the space of leaves is exactly C, so the complex plane. So C, if you think of the, it's a very rigid structure, C. I have very few diffeomorphisms of C. The only one are the linear maps. So in fact, zero corresponds to the invariant manifold of the saddle, infinity in the limit would correspond to the invariant manifold of the node. So I have a very, very rigid coordinate. So that means there is something intrinsic in that, nearly intrinsic in that space of leaves over my there is a, and in fact there are very few, well, the only symmetries I can have when I bring to the model, then the only symmetries I have on this big domain is to change Y to a constant times Y. So just linear maps on Y, these are the only symmetries. So over each of these domains, I have a nearly unique change of coordinate to the model. So I have one on the yellow domain, I have one above the blue domain, and then what's my invariant? My invariant is the comparison of the two change of coordinates over the intersection. And because the coordinate is almost unique, then this change of leaf coordinate is something which is intrinsic. For instance, if it's nonlinear, I cannot change something nonlinear into something linear by a linear change of coordinate. So that's how we build some invariant. So the modulus psi zero and psi infinity measures the change of leaf coordinate. Psi zero, it measures here. Psi infinity, it measures here. Of course, there is another change here. Here, the change of coordinate. The reason why I don't write it. On one side, my space of leaves is C. On the other one, my space of leaves is C. And then my change of coordinate is a global diffeomorphism, so it's just a linear map. What is important is that this change of coordinate, the one I call, it's attached to the point infinity, so I call it psi infinity, because in general, psi infinity is a germ of map at infinity. Psi zero is a germ of map at the origin, so this is why I have taken infinity and zero. And these, they pass to the limit, so they will go, they are analytic on this ramified neighborhood with a continuous limit at the origin. So in fact, then what you have at the origin, the psi infinity, psi zero, it's the Martinet-Ramis invariant for the saddle node. So that means what we have is unfolded the Martinet-Ramis modulus. Okay, so psi zero, it's a germ of analytic map at the origin. Psi infinity in general, if I was having a resonant saddle, it would be a germ of analytic map at infinity. Because of a saddle node, it is just an affine map. So let me explain why, because this was one of the questions in the paper of Martinet Ramis. Why is it different for a saddle node? Well, a saddle node is a saddle with a node. So when I draw my node, so here are my leaves. And if I was looking, in fact, if I was complexifying here, if I just make one cut so I don't allow to make a turn around, then the space of leaves is C. So the node is very, very rigid. So that there is, it's a the space of leaves is so simple, C, that I have no, all nodes are the same. That they have just, the only thing you can have in a node, there is the dynamics is very poor in the node. Because the space of leaves, C, you have no diffeomorphism. When C is always, well, the only diffeomorphisms of C, if you preserve zero and infinity, are the linear maps. In fact, the only important thing for my node is this invariant manifold that I have to preserve, because it's the strong manifold. So I have to preserve infinity. If my node is resonant, if I turn around, I may not have an analytic manifold, so I may have a translation. So this is the only thing I have. So this is why phi infinity is an affine map. Okay, translation, I can have a coefficient, an affine map. So there is, so in fact, this is the reason why the change of coordinate converges to a node. It's because the model of the node it reflects completely the dynamics. But the model for the saddle, this model is not enough rich for all the saddles. So you need to have divergence and to be able to read the dynamics elsewhere. And in fact, what's the difference, another difference you have between a saddle and a node? A node, when you get a small neighborhood and you shrink the neighborhood, you always get exactly the same leaves, which is not the case if you have a saddle. And you don't allow to turn around. So if you take smaller neighborhood, then you don't get the same space of leaves. So there are some things that are explained by the geometry of the foliage. So on the middle sector, as I said, the transition is linear. So it's something, it's very wild. It has no limit when epsilon goes to zero. If I am in that direction, then I will see that the multiplier is on the unit circle, but it will be an angle that goes to infinity when epsilon goes to zero. So I go, and on this case, well, the multiplier can be either exponentially small or exponentially large. So I have no limit, but it's linear. The nonlinearity are, in some sense, intrinsic. If you think that psi zero and psi infinity, they have a limit when epsilon is different from zero. Well, if for epsilon go to zero, if I have a Martinet Ramis which is nonlinear, then in the unfolding it will be nonlinear. So now the question which was settled just in the last year. The realizability condition. So we have, well, maybe I should have stated the theorem before. So when we have two families, for instance, unfolding a saddle node, when are they orbitally equivalent? Well, they need to have the same codimension. Well, I have not explained, but there is, I can make a change of parameter to have a canonical parameter. So I don't need, if I choose the canonical parameter so that it's an analytic invariant, then when I consider two families, I don't need to reparametrize to decide if they are equivalent. So they have the same codimension, the same parameter if they are generic families. They have the same formal invariant. Of course, the formal invariant depends on epsilon. So I have a function A of epsilon, which is analytic in epsilon. And I have the same families psi infinity epsilon hat psi 0 epsilon hat up to some equivalence relation. I won't write the detail. My space of Lise is almost rigid, but the only freedom I have is a change of linear coordinates on the space of Lise. So this is my modulus, and then I want to say, well, if I suppose I give myself E epsilon and some family like that, is it the modulus of an analytic family unfolding a vector field? This is the realizability question. So given this data, which one can I realize and which one cannot I cannot realize? So in fact, when we want to realize a modulus, okay, so what we realize, our modulus is given on this neighborhood and in this part of the neighborhood, well, we give ourselves some description of the potential dynamics of a system. In fact, an individual family like that can always be realized. But we want to have a family that would be analytic in epsilon. So we have here, we have two different dynamics, two different descriptions of the dynamics for the same, for, and I want for the same object because I want to realize a uniform family on epsilon, and I have given myself two different dynamics. So certainly a necessary condition is that I need that, to say that these two descriptions give me equivalent dynamics. It's the minimum that I have to give. And this will be a sufficient condition for realizability. But we have to express how we express on A and Psi that the two families, that this describes the same dynamics. This is the difficulty, and this will be the sufficient condition for realizing. You see already what's the difficulty. Here I have described, so I have two, on the intersection I have two hyperbolic points. You can imagine a point that have a, that has an eigenvalue epsilon I, and then another one, the eigenvalue 1. Here I have described the dynamics by saying, okay, I look, I approach the point, and the leaves are the leaves explode. On the other part, I approach the point from the other side of the boundary, and then the leaves are asymptotic to the point. Of course, this is not intrinsic. My two points are linearizable. So in fact, well, I know they have the same eigenvalue, so I have said nothing when I have said that. So globally near each point, I haven't said nothing, but locally near each point, but a global portrait should be. So in fact, what I have, I should recover the local model here, the linear model, which is almost unique. I should recover the linear model here, which is almost unique, and I should compare there. If I do that here, and I want to do that up, and I want to say that these are the same. So this is what I told you. So for parameter values on the O2 intersection of my neighborhood, in fact, I took it big, but the parameter, it shouldn't be so. What is important is that when I have two descriptions, then the two singular points, they are linearizable. So if I looked, I was taking, so this was my X plane, but now my singularities have turned. So I have one here, and I was having neighborhoods like that. So I was having sectors like that. So I want to change sectors, and I want to go, okay, near this point, I can bring to the model because my point is linearizable. So linearizable, I can go to the model. So I can go to the model on some sector like that. And here I will be able to go near this point to the model on some sector like that. So this is what I have to do. I have to find going to the model. If I have to find I don't have the model, I don't have X and Y, I just have these objects. These objects, but they are defined on leaf coordinates. So what is the leaf coordinate for the model? The leaf coordinate for the model is what I want is if I am on the leaf coordinate where I am, where I have linear, it's an analytic coordinate around a point that brings me to the model. Then when I make a full turn around the point, of course my leaf is ramified. But when I make a full turn around the point, then I have change by a linear, the change is linear. So if I go to the, if I normalize the system near the point, going around the point on the leaf is changing by a linear factor. So this is what I have to say. I have to say what it means. What it means going around the point here. So I have, this is my first sector, and my second sector is here. So what does it mean going around the point here? Going around the point, I need to change sector here, so I will, if I change here, the change here, it's my, this was my psi zero, and then I need to cross the middle, so it's a linear transformation. So I have, so making a turn around this point, it's taking this composition. That's what we can say. And then what I, but I know, of course, my constant, I told you, was exponentially small or exponentially large. So I have a, so the linear part of this map is different from the identity, and this map is linearizable. So I can take a change of coordinates, which brings me to a linear map. So in fact, I can linearize, so what it means is that, so the H is my change to the leaf coordinate. And then, when I change to the leaf coordinate, where I have the model on this side, and I have the change, the leaf coordinate where I have the model here, and then if I go from one to the other, that's an invariant. Because if you are having other change, if you start from the model, you go back, and you come back, this is an invariant. So this is what says the compatibility condition. So as I say, I want to linearize the return map either near the zero point or near the infinity point. And then, so this invariant was studied by Gluczuk, so we call it the Gluczuk invariant. So it's the change of leaf coordinate from the upper sector to the lower sector. So when we draw this, we use 2D, well, just to draw the thing, we use two different names for epsilon. We use epsilon bar when we are here, and when we have make a full turn, we use the epsilon tilde. So we have our linearizing maps. And then what is important, these linearizing maps, so they are the change of coordinate when I bring to the model in the neighborhood of the singular point. When I am inside here, so the h bar infinity is attached to the upper point, and the h bar zero, h tilde zero is attached to the upper point. And here, h bar 0 is attached to the lower point, and this one here. So what I will write is going from here to here, so h bar infinity minus 1 composed with h bar 0 should be the same as h tilde 0 minus 1 to h tilde infinity. Sorry, this part is a little more technical. So here is my condition coming from the upper point to the, there is some others. I think I did, it's the upper point, it should be h bar 0, should be the same as h tilde 0 minus 1 h tilde infinity. Of course, the Gluck invariant, same as is always, only defined up to linear maps. So I may have to correct with linear maps L, A, and L, L. So the theorem says that if you have an analytic map E epsilon to represent the formal invariant, an analytic family where psi infinity is affine, which satisfies this ugly compatibility condition, then it can be realized as the modulus of an orbital analytic classification of a germ of family of saddle nodes. So I have a saddle node, but I may have terms in X. If I cannot remove the terms, the pure terms in X, in particular, is that allow some non-analytic center manifold, and I can have some higher order terms in Y that are the ones that are controlled with these singularities on the left. So next steps and perspectives. So of course, generalize to higher codimension. So we have described with Loïc Tessier the modulus for a saddle node, a family unfolding a saddle node of codimension k, but we have not identified yet the realizability condition, so it's a bit more complicated. And what I have told you today doesn't work exactly because here we have two parts of the modulus, psi zero, psi infinity, and I have two points, a saddle and a node, and I told you, well, one goes to the node and the other one goes to the saddle. Well, if you go to codimension k, you have two k parts of the modulus and k plus one points. So the combinatorics doesn't work like that. So it's not that the parts control the singular points, and we have to study the things. The parts control some sectors on the boundary. So the center manifolds are not attached to the point, but they are attached to some sectors on the boundary. So the realizability condition, it's what we could do at the time with Colin Christopher. It's certainly not an elegant compatibility condition, the realizability condition. Is there some way of having some... Okay, consequence of the compatibility condition is that my psi infinity and psi zero can be chosen one summable. But this is not a sufficient condition. And it's very tricky. For instance, unless I have the Riccati system, I cannot realize constant psi infinity and psi zero. It's impossible. The compatibility condition is so strong that it forbids constant functions. So it's functions that are... It's a very, very strong, because you sort of force things to commute that are completely independent at the limit. So certainly the realizability condition, there is still a lot to be done. It's not well understood. So. And similar terms exist. So for the resonant diffeomorphism, for the resonant saddle, and also for systems of linear differential equations. So you have a system of linear differential equation which has an irregular singular point, but of Poincaré order 1, so two objects coming together. So this has been done by my PhD student, so she's finishing her PhD, Caroline Lambert. So in particular, the non-triviality of the Stokes matrices, it implies when you unfold an irregular singular point, you can find some regular singular points. Some regular singular points, well, they may have some logarithmic term. For instance, if you look to solutions of hypergeometric equation. Well, the kind of theorem you get is if the Stokes matrix has non-diagonal coefficients, you will necessarily have the logarithmic terms at the regular singular points that come from... So in fact, all these logarithmic terms that we see in the solutions of the linear differential equations can be explained by unfolding some irregular singularities. So this is the end of my talk.